Chapter 10. The technicians and workers stood around the lab, confused and puzzled, frightened of the soldiers standing there with their weapons and refusing to allow anyone to leave, mystified as to what was happening around them. All the machines were running. They had simply come on all by themselves. Data flickered across the screens at an impossible rate of speed. Every databank within the lab was being accessed, and none of them knew how. Jennifer Stone rushed around the lab, trying to shut down the computers, but she was having no more luck than she had up in Higgins' office. She ran from keyboard to keyboard, but she could get no response to her commands. She flicked the power switches, all to no avail. "Rip out all the power lines," said Higgins. "All of them!" "I can't," she said. "They're all hardwired. We have to rip up the floor and tear out the cables." "Well, do something, for God's sake. Shut down all the power to the lab. If we did that now, we could lose irreplaceable data," she said. "Damn it!" Higgins swore. The soldiers stood around nervously, knowing that something was terribly wrong, but not knowing if what it was and knowing what, if anything, they were supposed to do about it. It's here," said Higgins. "It came down through the goddamn power lines. It's raiding all our data." "Not it," said Jennifer. "He. And I don't see what we can do about it. We simply have to let it run its course and see what happens." "Damn it. I need Cooper down here," Higgins said. "He's been talking with that thing. Maybe he can stop it. Maybe he can tell us what the hell it wants." "Not it," said Jennifer again. "That's Steel in there, his electronic twin. And you ask me, he wants everything. Dev Cooper couldn't give him the right answers, so he came to get them for himself." "What the hell are we supposed to do?" asked Higgins. Jennifer shook her head. "I don't know," she said. "All we can do is wait and see." One of the soldiers came hurrying up to them.
"Sir, there's a call for you from the security station up on the roof."
"Christ, what now?" said Higgins. He turned to a phone and picked it up. "Higgins," he said.
"Sir, Steel's chopper just landed on the helipad, but Steel's not aboard. It's three civilians. They say their names are Ice, Raven Scarpetti, and Jason Steel, the lieutenant's son. And they are demanding to speak with you at once. They say it is an extreme emergency."
"All right, put Ice on." A moment later, Ice's unmistakable, deep, rumbling voice came on over the phone.
"Is that you, Higgins?"
"What's going on, Ice? Why are you here? Where's Steel?"
"Don't know,"
I said.
"We got us a problem. Steel took off somewhere. Took his full battle kit. And Stalker just called. Said he got police Steel's daughter. Wants Steel to meet him at Penn Station. Said to come alone or else he'd kill the girl. We couldn't call because Stalker done tapped into the phone somehow. You gotta get Steel on that broadcast link and let him know."
"I'll get right on it," Higgins said. "You three better come on down. Tell security to take you to my office." "No, wait. Better not. Have them take you down to Dr. Stone's office. I'll meet you there in just a..."
"No can do, Mr. H. You gotta take us a little trip out to Pennsylvania Station."
"Are you crazy? Stay the hell away from there. I want you to..." The line went dead. Ice had ripped the phone wire out of the receiver. He held it up to show the guard and shrugged.
"Shit. Look what I went and done. Must be nerves, man. Sorry about the phone. We leaving now."
He hurried back out to the chopper pad as the guard stared after him, perplexed. Down in the lab, Higgins suddenly realized that he didn't know if he could get Steel on the broadcast link. Not with that thing, no matter what Jennifer said it was, apparently in control of the lab. But at least the phones were still working. He dialed Connor's extension.
"Connors?"
"It's Higgins, Andy. Stalker's at Penn Station. Alert the task force. Tell them to be careful. He might have Steel's daughter with him. Get out the call. I'll get right back to you."
"Right. I'm on it."
Higgins hung up the phone. Jennifer was staring at him. She had overheard what he said. "I need that broadcast link for Steel," he said. "Can we get through to him?" "I don't know," she said. "I've never used it before. I've read the files on it, but that's not the same as..." Suddenly, all the machines started to shut down. Jennifer moistened her lips. "You don't think he heard us?" she said. "I don't know," said Higgins. "The lab's wired for sound. It's part of the security system. It's possible that..." Jennifer didn't waste to listen to the rest of it. She ran over to one of the consoles and punched in a code. "It's responding now," she said. Higgins came up behind her. She started to call up the sequence for the broadcast link to Steel's cybernetic brain, but the program came up at once, before she could even finish. "Jesus, this is scary," she said. She typed in the commands to activate the signal. They waited.
Okay, she said, after a moment, taking a deep breath. I'm getting through. She started typing out the message. Steele held the tunnel dweller up against the wall by his throat. The filthy, scrofulous man stared back to him, eyes wide with terror. His companions lay on the tracks around them, some unconscious, some dead, some moaning from their injuries. They had heard him coming down the tunnel and had hidden in the service niches, waiting for him to get closer, but it had not turned out at all the way they had planned. They jumped him when he got close, but he was ready for them. Too late, they saw that he was armed, but he didn't even shoot. He simply clubbed them down with the rifle, tore them from his back with one hand, and flung them with incredible force against the tunnel walls, knocked them down, and crushed their skulls with just one blow, moving so quickly and fighting back with such incredible strength that it was over in a matter of seconds. Now the one remaining derelict gazed with fear into those horrible, red-glowing eyes, not even trying to struggle against the powerful grip that held him. "Where's Stalker?" Steele said. "Another one just like me! He's hiding down here somewhere with you, scum! Where is he?" The terrified derelict shook his head and made small whimpering noises. "Talk, you miserable son of a—" Suddenly, Steele stiffened. A message was coming through the broadcast link. As he received it, a chill went through him. He took the tunnel dweller and tossed him aside as if he were a doll, then ran at full speed down the tracks. The chopper sat down at Pennsylvania Plaza near the corner of West 33rd and 8th. The pilot turned back towards them, his voice sounding tinny through the speaker of his VCASS helmet.
"The task force moving in,"
he said.
"I'm monitoring their communications. All units are converging on Penn Station."
"We better get a move on then,"
said Ice.
"They get here before we go down, they probably try to stop us."
"I should probably try to stop you too,"
the pilot said.
"Yo, Jason, watch what the hell you doing, boy,"
Ice said.
"That grenade done gonna fall out your right pocket."
"What?" said Jason, looking down. Ice crashed his fist into his jaw. The boy crumpled in the seat.
"Take him back,"
I said to the pilot.
"And sit on him."
"You got it,"
said the pilot.
"Watch yourself down there. I'll radio the task force that you're going down so they don't shoot you by mistake."
"Appreciate that,"
said Ice.
"They're not going to be happy about it, but I'll tell them you held a gun to my head. Good luck."
They got out and he lifted off, heading back toward the penthouse. They ran toward the entrance to the station. It had once been the main railroad terminal in New York City, connecting with subway lines running uptown and downtown, and trains heading out to Long Island, with an Amtrak terminal that had lines running out to Providence and Boston, and points north to Philadelphia and Washington, D.C., and points south and west across the country. It was a huge complex underneath Madison Square Garden, and it had once held rows of the shops and restaurants, bars and newsstands, and even an off-track betting parlor. Now it was deserted, a shelter for only the most desperate of homeless derelicts. The stairs and floors were littered with trash and soiled with human excrement. The ticket counters had been broken up for fuel, and the shops were empty. The windows smashed, the interiors gutted, and many of them burned. The railroad lines no longer ran. The only way out of the city was by road across the bridges and protected convoys. And there were no power lines down here anymore. The only illumination came from fires burning in metal garbage cans, dimly lighting up ruined booths and storefronts that once sold books and men's apparel, chocolates and newspapers, magazines, beer, hot dogs, fresh clams brought in from the Long Island shore. A haze of smoke hung in the air from the cans out in the corridors and fire spilt inside the storefronts, where shadowy figures huddled together for warmth and stared out at them with glittering eyes. It was like entering another world, and somewhere in this huge charnel house of human refuse, Stalker was hiding with Corey Steele, hiding and waiting.
"You really think you got the girl?"
I said as they moved cautiously forward.
"I believed him,"
Raven said.
"He said he killed Borodini. He must have traced him down somehow."
"Poor kid must have been through the mill, all right,"
I said.
"Think she's still alive?"
"It would make sense for him to use her as a hostage,"
Raven said.
"But we can't let Stalker call the shots. He's insane. There's no guarantee that he'll let Corey live, no matter what we do. And Steele knows that, too. I just hope he gets here in time."
"Don't think about it,"
I said.
"Just watch yourself. There'll be a lot of crazies down here."
Even as he spoke, several groups of men and women, bedraggled and disheveled, came shambling out of several dark storefronts up ahead to either side of them. More came from a corridor leading off to the side. Raven quickly glanced around and saw that there was more behind them, cutting them off. The shambling, tattered figures started moving toward them. Ice turned on the laser sighting system on his battle rifle, and a thin, bright red beam of light stabbed out towards them. Raven did the same. They scattered, scuttling back into the shadows. They knew what laser sighting systems were. They'd seen them before when the Strike Force squads came into the station periodically to clean them out, never with complete success. Raven exhaled heavily.
"Maybe we bit off more than we could chew,"
she said nervously.
Ice chuckled.
Count on it,
he said. He switched off the laser sighting system.
Better move soft and move slow. Some of them might not scare so easy.
They took the stairs down to the section of the station where the terminal for the Long Island Railroad had once been located. More fires burned down here in rusted and blackened metal cans, but there was no sign of any derelicts. Ice hesitated for the stairs, listening.
Don't want to sound like no cliche,
Ice said,
but it's just too damn quiet down here.
Off to their right, set back from the lobby of the terminal, was a seating area. Most of the chairs had long since been ripped out. They could see ragged blankets and soiled rags, old newspapers and mattresses scattered around the floor, but no one bedding down, nor could they see all the way back into the shadows. To their left were several sliding metal doors that opened to the stairs leading down to the tracks. The doors were open, and there were nothing but darkness beyond. Farther up ahead, in the center of the lobby, were the remains of an information booth that had been busted down for firewood. Beyond that were old abandoned storefronts running up and down the length of the lobby, shattered glass from their windows covering the floor, impenetrable darkness within. The concourse had opened out into a T-shape at that point, with Raven and Ice standing at the bottom. Ahead and to their left was a wide concourse going past abandoned, ruined storefronts, leading to the old downtown subway lines. To their right, the concourse ran past the old ticket counter, which had been torn down at some point, and narrowed at the end near the remains of a refreshment stand and a bar, where it became a corridor leading to the up-down lines and stairs to the street level. A lot of space. A lot of darkness. Dimly illuminated by flickering flames and heavily shadowed.
I don't like it any better than you do,
Raven said.
Why didn't any of them come down here?
She looked behind her. Dark figures stood clustered at the top of the stairs, but they made no move to come down after them.
He's down here somewhere,
Raven said tensely.
I just know it. I hope like hell Higgins got through to Steel. I hate the thought of just the two of us down here alone.
Bit too late to be thinking about that,
said Ice Riley.
Besides, the task force bound to be getting down here any time. Stalker done boxed himself in.
Maybe that's exactly what he wants.
It was very quiet. Suddenly, they heard the telltale click of a bolt being drawn back. Ice spun towards the sound and fired. The staccato rattle of the battle rifle echoed loudly throughout the concourse. They heard the sound of a body falling, and the clatter of a weapon on the floor. Immediately, other weapons opened up. Assault rifles, semi-automatics, and machine pistols. Ice grabbed Raven and pulled her down to the floor. Bullets thudded into the walls around them and went whining off the stairs. They heard a voice shouting over the crashing of the guns.
Cease fire! Cease fire!
Come on,
Ice said.
Crawl on your belly.
They wriggled toward the waiting area to their right, where they could take shelter behind a pile of rubble on the wall.
Steel?
A hoarse, metallic-sounding voice called out.
Steel?
I think we found him,
Raven said.
More like he found us,
said Ice.
I didn't bargain on him having no army. We in a pack of trouble.
Where the hell are they?
Raven said.
Up ahead, in the main concourse, hiding outside the stores,
said Ice.
Steel! Come out, Steel! I've got your daughter. Come on out! And meet me.
We need some more light down here,
said Ice. He reached into his pocket and pulled out an incendiary grenade, yanked the pin and counted, then got up to his knees and lobbed it toward the wreckage of the information booth in the center of the concourse. The grenade hit and went off with a concussive roar and a huge wash of flame, lighting up the entire concourse around it, illuminating shabby figures with automatic weapons standing in the storefront entrances and crouching in the shattered window displays. Ice and Raven opened fire, sweeping their laser sights across the row of ruined stores. The tunnel dwellers jerked and fell. Some of them took off running, away from the line of fire. Ice and Raven cut them down as they ran, but the others got away, down both ends of the concourse, while others still retreated back into the darkness of the stores and returned their fire. For what seemed like a long time, the crackle of automatic weapons fire echoed through the concourse. Then they heard Stalker screaming for them to cease fire once again. The weapons fire gradually died away. Ice and Raven heard the sound of running footsteps and gunfire from the corridors above them.
Damn you, Steel! I said to come alone. Your daughter's gonna die for this.
Steel ain't here!
Shouted Ice.
What are you doing?
Raven said.
Play for time,
Ice said.
Who are you? Where's Steel?
Raven heard sounds behind them and to their left. She turned and saw black-clad figures in full riot gear crawling down the old rusted and frozen elevator, using its waist-high metal walls to shield them from fire.
Over here!
She hissed. Raven! That you? She didn't recognize the voice, but a moment later, a man wearing full riot gear complete with a computer backpack, equipped with rocket launchers and battle helmet, came crawling into the darkened waiting area, his assault rifle cradled in his elbows. He was followed by several of his men. In their black fatigues, they blended with the shadows and moved down into the lower terminal like ghosts. She couldn't see his face behind the shield. With the image intensifier and infrared systems built into his helmet, he could see clearly in the dark. Lieutenant Volkirk, he said.
Am I glad to see you?
Raven said with relief. Are you two out of your fucking minds? Said Volcourt. Get the hell out of here. We'll cover for you. We've got the entire place surrounded. Units coming down from all sides. This place is going to get damned hot in about 30 seconds.
It's already damned hot,
Raven said.
And we're not going anywhere. If your people start shooting at anything that moves, you're liable to hit Corey. She's down here with Stalker somewhere.
There's nothing I can do about that, Volker said grimly. We've got our orders. Stalker doesn't get out of here alive. We can't take any chances. We'll blow the whole damn place up if we have to.
And what about Corey?
Asked Raven. She's expendable, said Volkirk.
She's what?
Said Raven with disbelief. Look, I don't like it any better than you do, Volkirk said heavily. I'm sorry, but I've got my orders.
You just got new orders,
Raven said, leveling her rifle at him. Several Volkirk's men immediately brought their weapons up, but he quickly held up his hand, holding them off. Don't be stupid, he said. You can shoot me, but that won't change a thing. My people will still carry out their orders.
Steel!
Stalker called out again from somewhere in the concourse.
I want steel! Steel! Where the hell are you?
I'm right here, Mick! They suddenly heard Steel call out. Everybody hold your fire!
Hot damn!
Said Ice.
Thank God,
Raven said.
Where is he?
Volkirk shook his head. I don't know. I can't see him. Can't tell where the hell anybody is with all the echo down here. He spoke into his helmet mic. This is Volkirk. Everybody hold their positions. Hold your fire unless attacked. Repeat. Hold your fire unless attacked. I'm the one you want, Mick! Steel called out. Send Corey out! We'll settle this just between ourselves. That's what you wanted, isn't it, Mick?
Don't call me that.
Why not? It's your name, Mick. Remember? You're Mick Taylor. We used to be partners, Mick. We used to be friends.
Shut up. Shut up.
I love you like a brother, Mick. Corey loves you. She used to call you Uncle Mick, remember? You used to bounce her on her knee when she was just a baby. You don't really want to hurt her, do you, Mick?
Oh, damn you. I said to come alone. It's all your fault. I said to come alone, or else I'd kill her.
If it was up to me, Mick, I would have come alone. Believe me. But it wasn't up to me. I didn't bring these people. You did.
You're trying to confuse me.
You are confused, Mick. You're confused and you're hurting. I know. Let me try to help you.
Help me? Like you helped me before? You left me to die. You bastard.
That isn't true, Mick. Steel called out. They could still not see where either of them were. I didn't leave you. I was hit too.
You're lying. You got me killed. They wouldn't let me stay dead. They brought me back. Made me to some goddamned machine.
I know, Mick. Believe me. I know. They did it to me too. But you can live with this. You really can. There's something wrong with your mind. You're sick. Come back with me, Mick! Please! Let me help you! They can fix it!
No! I don't want to be like this!
His voice was a hysterical half-scream, half-sob.
Why couldn't they let me die? Why did you have to make them do this? Why? I'm gonna kill you for letting them do this to me! I'm gonna kill you! You lousy son of a bitch! You're going to pay! You're all going to pay!
Okay, Mick! If that's the way you want to play it! But let Corey go! Please! She never did anything to you! She's been hurt enough! She loves you, Mick! Let her go! And I'll do anything you want! I'll send everyone away! It'll just be you and me! I promise! Send her out!
Silence. They all waited tensely. They heard a frightened young girl's voice call out.
Daddy?
Units 2 and 3 start moving in, Volkirk said into his helmet mic.
What the hell you doing, man?
I said. I can't take any chances, Volkirk said. I need to make sure all exits from the concourse are covered.
Stop it!
Raven said.
Send them back! Wait till she's clear! Daddy, where are you?
I'm over here, honey! I can see you! Come on! Keep coming straight ahead!
God damn it, Volkirk! Tell them to pull back!
Said Raven. They could now see Corey illuminated by the flames as she moved out into the center of the concourse. And then when someone yelled out a warning and opened fire, all hell broke loose.
Several other weapons opened up from behind the ruined storefronts, and Volkirk's men started to return the fire.
Daddy!
Corey screamed and fell. No!
Oh, Jesus!
Raven said. Move in! Volkirk shouted into his helmet mic. All units, move in now! Several rockets were launched, and they struck the storefronts where the fire was coming from. Flames and smoke belched forth as the rockets exploded. Men screamed, debris flew. The task force units started moving in, firing as they went. Raven saw Steele running out into the center of the concourse, heedless of the hail of bullets, bending over Corey. And then Raven was running herself, ignoring Ice crying out for her to stop. She kept on running, and suddenly she was tackled from behind. She went down hard. Ice threw himself on top of her.
Let me go! God damn you! Let me go!
Steele had Corey in his arms, and he was running toward them, bent over, trying to shield his daughter with his body. Volkirk and his men went running past them.
Steele!
Cried Raven.
Over here!
Ice got up as he came running toward them. Get her out of here! Said Steele. Get her to a hospital! Ice took Corey from his arms and started sprinting back toward the stairs. Go with him! Steele said to Raven. Help her! Please! They heard a whump as a blast of plasma struck Volkirk and his advancing unit. The men screamed as they were incinerated. Go! Said Steele. For a moment, but only just a moment, Raven hesitated, then turned and ran after Ice. In that moment, she had seen the blood on Steele's face where the bullets had struck him, ripping through the soft, human flesh of his cheek, and taking away most of his left ear. His clothes were riddled with bullet holes, and the polymer flesh was torn away from his scalp, hanging in flaps along his cybernetic hair, exposing the bright nice steel skull encasing beneath. As she turned and ran after Ice, tears streamed down her cheeks. Steele turned and ran back into the heat of battle. More plasma bursts were fired, one right after the other, and police and derelicts alike went up in flames. Many of them burned to a crisp before they knew what hit them. Others turned into human torches as they ran, screaming in agony and wreathed in fire. The remaining tunnel dwellers had enough. Many of them threw down their weapons and ran, panic-stricken, for the nearest exits or for the subway tunnels. But wherever they ran, they encountered Strike Force units and were cut down by a withering hail of fire. Steele released the lock on his left hand and twisted it off the wrist, snapping it onto one of the special locking discs on his weapon belt. Then he stuck his stump of a wrist into the machine pistol attachment on his belt, felt it click into place, and snapped it free. The machine pistol was now a part of him, fully thought-controlled, slave to a cybernetic brain. Holding the battle rifle by its pistol grip in his right hand, he ran in the direction that the plasma burst had come from, his eyes glowing red as his laser designator system switched in. Starker had fled down the far end of the concourse, firing plasma as he ran, burning down Strike Force units that tried to block his way. One officer managed to throw a grenade before he died. It went off in the cyborg's path, peppering him with shrapnel. He felt no pain. He simply kept on moving, mowing down anyone in his way. He reached one of the subway platforms and plowed through the iron gate, tearing it off its hinges. He jumped down onto the tracks and started running down the tunnel. He knew that Steele would follow him. He was counting on it. It was what he wanted. The two of them, alone. Steele leaped over to the burning bodies and ran out into the subway platform. Behind him, the sounds of the battle were starting to die down. Most of it was over. But for him, the final battle was just beginning. He had the image of his daughter's torn and bleeding body in his mind, and cold rage surged through him like a cataract. He stopped and listened. His left ear was no longer functional, but he could still hear out of his right. He turned it up full and heard the sound of running footsteps in the distance, down the tunnel to his right. He leaped down into the tracks and gave pursuit. He ran at full speed down the dark tunnel, but he knew that he would not catch Stalker until he was ready to turn and fight. Judging the distance by the sound of Stalker's running footsteps, he could tell that the renegade cyborg was faster than he was. He refused to think of it as Mick. It wasn't Mick. Mick Taylor was dead. This was a killer machine. And he was going to dismantle it, smash it to 1,000 pieces, or die in the attempt. They were underneath Times Square now, following the old, abandoned IRT Broadway 7th Avenue line, heading uptown. Stalker kept on moving ahead of him. Steele ran with everything he had, but he couldn't close the distance between them. Past 50th Street, heading towards Columbus Circle. They were heading toward the heart of Midtown. Suddenly, the tunnel ahead of him glowed with intense light, and Steele ducked back into a service niche, just in time as the plasma burst hurled past him, searing with its heat. He felt the human flesh on his face blister, crackle, and peel. The polymer skin over his scalp and forehead start to melt. His hair caught fire. He paid no attention to it, letting it burn and switching off the pain circuits in his brain as he took off down the tunnel once again, firing his battle rifle as he ran.
At Columbus Circle, Stockler left the tracks and jumped up onto the platform. Steele swore under his breath as he realized that he was heading up into the streets. He jumped up onto the platform and ran for the stairs, taking them three and four at a time until he reached the street. It was deserted. He stopped and listened, sweeping the area with his optical systems on image intensifier and maximum zoom. There. Stalker was heading into Central Park. It skirted the old Heckscher playground, heading in a northeasterly direction, past the pond and towards the Woolman Rink. And it was there that Stalker stopped, in the old rink, standing in the center of it, waiting for him. They stood facing each other like two wounded gladiators, part bleeding flesh, part damaged machine. The red lights glowing in Stalker's eyes allowed for no human expression. The hunks of flesh torn away by bullets revealed cold, unfeeling knife steel. He stood there, a creature born of nature and technology run wild. The thing that was once Mick Taylor, but that had now become a mockery of a human being. A mockery, just as Steele himself was. The hair and synthetic skin burned from his head. His features, a horrible mass of melted polymer and blackened flesh. His soul tormented, encased in circuitry. Electrical synapses crackling with rage. Blood and bone and steel, crying out for human revenge. Steel justice.
"Neither of us has any business being alive,"
said Stalker, his voice a horrible metallic snarl.
"Come on, let's finish it!"
Steele raised his battle rifle and machine pistol and opened up with both on full auto. Stalker jerked and staggered backwards as the bullet struck him in the chest, shredding his clothes, but he did not go down. Steele kept up the stream of fire until both weapons were empty, but the cyborg stood. He raised his arm, and Steele leapt to one side as the plasma charge whooshed past him, striking the trees behind him and setting them aflame. Steele hit the ground and rolled, dropping his empty rifle as he came up and pulling out a magazine filled with high-explosive rounds. Stalker fired another burst of plasma, and Steele leaped again, diving and rolling out of the way as the blast plowed into the ground. Stalker fired again. The firing mechanism cycled, but no blast of searing plasma came forth. He tried again with no result. He had run out of charges. Steele slapped the magazine into his pistol attachment and brought it up, aiming at Stalker's head. But the other cyborg was too fast for him. He raised his other arm, and the laser turret exposed, and a bright beam of collimated light lanced out, striking Steele's machine pistol attachment with pinpoint precision before he could open fire. It melted and fused into a useless polymer ceramic lump. Steele released the lock and let the attachment fall as the 10mm gun barrel built into his right forearm came sliding out the gun port in his palm. He had loaded his built-in magazine with armor-piercing bullets. As Stalker brought up the laser up, sweeping it along Steele's body toward its head, Steele fired one round after another, emptying the magazine, his target designator locked onto Stalker's turret. The armor-piercing round smashed unerringly into Stalker's hand, pulverizing it, smashing the laser turret, and rendering it useless. Stalker screamed and launched himself at Steele. Steele barely had any time to stick his wrist back into his knife, steel, and polymer hand attachment, snapping it loose from its locking disc on his belt before Stalker was on him. Steele felt the powerful knife steel arms encircle him and squeeze as they both fell backward onto the ground. He rolled, taking Stalker with him, and dove his forehead hard into the renegade cyborg's face, shattering his nose and splintering the cheekbones. For a second, his grip on him loosened, and Steele broke free, rolling to his feet. Stalker came up bellowing and came at him once again. They traded punishing blows. Steele caught one in his chest and felt his nice steel ribs buckle, threatening to crush the human organs underneath. He drove his fist into Stalker's face and saw the jaw break loose, teeth and bone and reinforcing metal disintegrating in a spray of blood. They rained blows on each other, blocking them with their arms, using their powerful nice steel legs and martial arts techniques. Sparks flew as metal met metal, and electricity raced from the damaged circuits. Around them, outside the rink, trees and bushes burned, lighting up the sky. Blood poured from Steele's mouth and broken nose. It flowed from Starker's shattered jaw. Exposed knife steel caught the reflection of the flames. Steele kept trying to block the punches Stalker aimed at his head and chest. One arm now hung useless at his side. He struck out desperately with his foot, using all the force that he could muster in a sidekick, aimed at Stalker's knee. The kick connected and the knife steel joint snapped. Stalker went down. Steele leaped upon him, battering away repeatedly at Stalker's head with his one good hand. The optics crackled and shattered, fracturing like marbles. Stalker's head looked like misshapen, dented. He made attempts to block the blows, but Steele kept hammering away relentlessly, like a man possessed, grunting with the effort, smashing away again and again and again. Stalker's arms were flailing now. Sparks shot from his shattered eyes. Hideous, metallic croaking sound came from his throat. But Steel would not let up. His arm rose and fell and rose and fell repeatedly, smashing through the skull casing even as the impacts broke his nice steel fingers, and the jagged edges of Stalker's broken skull casing sliced through the polymer skin. Electricity crackled like 4th of July sparklers as Steel crashed his battered and misshapen hand into Stalker's cybernetic brain, pounding it to pieces. Stalker was no longer moving. The machine was dead, but Steel kept pounding away until he finally realized with a shock that it was over. Then he stopped and stared, horror-struck at his handiwork. He had won. He was not supposed to win. Stalker had been more advanced, superior in every way. Yet he had won. Something deep within him, something human and indomitable, had allowed him to prevail against all odds. The ruined thing beneath him was no longer even looked remotely like a person. It was not McTaylor, Steel tried to tell himself. It had never been Mick Taylor. It was a machine, much more of a machine than he was, more advanced, more indestructible, and yet he had somehow managed to destroy it. And as he stared at its remains, the memory came back to him of what they had said to each other back in the concourse. Come back with me, Mick! Please! Let me help you! They can fix it!
No! I don't want to be like this! Why couldn't they let me die?
Steel fell back onto the ground with a moan. Oh, God, he said hoarsely. Why, Mick? Why? The flames burned brightly around the rink, and Steel could hear the sounds of choppers approaching. He thought of Corey crying out for him as they shot her down. He thought of his son Jason close to tears and crying out, You were never there! He thought of Janice saying, I don't want the kids to have some kind of robot for a father. He thought of Mick crying out,
I don't want to be like this!
The cry seemed to echo through his mind, and suddenly he understood, and the park echoed with his scream of pain. End of chapter.